First and foremost, thanks for a really positive reaction to the first episode of Between the Lines Lads podcast, sponsored by Killshot. We've had loads of messages of support and we're very grateful for the feedback. Kicking off tonight, we'll be chatting about the men's and women's senior finals. We've shown how much we knew about it, with none of us predicting the correct result in both finals, although Paul did manage to get both results completely wrong. Fiona Tully became the first Roscommon woman to claim the O'Toole Cup, while Robbie McCarthy from Westmeath will have his name engraved on the Gael Lynn Cup for the eighth time. Chris, Paul, it was a final day that left us with many talking points. Where do you want to begin, lads?
Oh, well, you tell me now, Steve, but I was going to just throw this out there for discussion to get us going, lads. And for not taking away from the champions for a second, but to me it was a forgettable finals day, because if you look back over the last few years alone, like, I'm even going to go back to the glory days of yore, but go back, look at the last few years alone. 2022, you had a tiebreaker. It was the first final after COVID. Jermyn Nash beats Robbie McCarthy in a tiebreaker. 2023, Sienna beat Trina Casey in a tiebreaker. 2024, you had the whole drama with Paul Brady and Robbie McCarthy and the injury, and look, Brady was going to win on his comeback. Brady gets injured. McCarthy gets the title. Last year, you had one of the most dramatic, sort of messy finals that you couldn't take your eyes off between Brady and Walsh, which ends up in an 11-9 tiebreaker. This year, two straight game finals. All winners were a good bit better on the day, to be fair, I would say, over the course of the two games. Forgettable, I would say.
Yeah, it was a bit, I suppose, when you start breaking it down. But the first game in both games was interesting. And once that first game of both finals was done, there was one-way traffic. You know, Sienna and Jermyn kind of needed that first game cushion. And it didn't work out for either of them on the day. And you're probably right. Yeah, it's not forgettable for Fiona or Robbie, but for a lot of the general viewing public, maybe a little bit. There's almost a little bit of familiarity with both finals as well, where we've seen Sienna and Fiona play a good bit over the last couple of years, but especially this year, they played three finals, including the senior final, and Robbie and Jermyn, they've just been battling now for years, with Robbie having a significant edge. So yeah, it's good games, good some decent highlights packages and bits and pieces, but not exactly the most spectacular finals days.
I think the week before there was a hangover from the week before. People were cranky, they were annoyed, they were tired. The week before was a bad experience, and it was a bad day for handball. The fact that, you know, we're nearing midnight and there's still fellas in the court here in senior single semi-finals, I honestly think it put people off going to the finals, and it dampened down a lot of the hype. People were like, oh, I'm handballed out. People that were in the National Centre on that evening went to the bar where the game wasn't even being shown. There could have been 20 or 30 handball people in the bar that evening that just could not watch any more handball, couldn't sit around any longer that Saturday evening. You're talking 7 days later. I actually think that did kill some of the hype and kill some of the feel-good factor and the excitement as it was. I think it really diluted that.
Yeah, just to jump in, lads. I know you're kind of both with the big pressed heads on you there about how bad it was and, you know, how underwhelming it might have been. But if you were to just take the first two games or the first game of each match, you know, Robbie and Dermot's match is decided at 21 or at 2019 on game ball. You know, it's as tight as it's going to get, really. There's a call that, you know, was questionable at best.
It wasn't questionable. It was just a bad call.
It's a bad call. But, you know, not short on drama in the first game in the men's. And then the women's, with Sienna 2013 down or 2012 down at one stage, gets it back to 21-17, building big momentum at the end of that first game, shaping up like the second game is going to happen. Sienna loses the second game 21-14. Again, not an absolute hammering. Now, obviously, in the second game of the men's, it was a bit more one-sided. Robbie running a 21-7 winner. But, you know, I'd argue three of the four games that were played were of the highest standard and were definitely interesting for the neutral to watch.
I didn't realize you'd be so diplomatic on these podcasts. That's why is this?
Listen, I have to have the antidote to what I'm like in real life somewhere.
Oh, you're going right wing on the podcast, I was looking at, I watched the end of the first game earlier because my thoughts in real time were that the game was there for Dermot at the end of the first game, and yeah, I agree about the call. Now, to say it's bad, that suggests, you know, it's malign or it's evil. It wasn't bad in that sense. It was just a wrong call, I think.
I think we all understand that part. And even like Gavin knows me, like he knew at the end of that game, he was like, I could see him go straight to his phone to have a look at it on the replay. He doesn't have the benefit of that replay straight away, you know.
Yeah,
But
I wouldn't referee an All Ireland senior final. Takes a lot of balls to get up and referee that game. I wouldn't criticize the referee, but I thought it was the wrong call at the time.
Chris, talking about Gavin looking at his phone and seeing the replay on his phone. Is that something we could look at, especially on the
no,
bigger days when
no,
we've got the
no,
lads from
no,
AKV there
no
giving
more
you a replay?
stoppages in the game, Markin. No, look what VAR has done to soccer. Are you telling us we need to bring in more stoppages in a sport which is becoming nigh on unwatchable?
Hold on, but they do it in the Race for Eight. They have an appeal process where they can go to a video appeal on the lines. So maybe one video appeal instead of having all the appeals. Maybe like it like we are look we I think that we do have to look at the way that the game is packaged and the amount of stoppages. I agree with you, Paul, to be honest. But like there's lots of people that are against shortening the game in a way, but it's not really about short. I don't believe it's about shortening the game. It's more about getting more action into the game, because as soon as there's a bit of action, it's all the time disrupted.
100%, 100%. The other thing you're saying about the line judges, it's hard to get referees, but we probably should look at appointing line judges in advance as well, because I know it was hard to get line judges on Saturday. I was talking to Gavin, and referee obviously has the job of appointing line judges, and it was hard to find neutrals there. And I mean, some of the calls to my eye, I saw them differently than what was given, and referee makes one call, and I was like, no, I don't agree with that. And then he goes to the line judges, and they were agreeing with him. And to my eye, those calls weren't correct. So I don't know. I think
The line judges thing in that show court is very, very difficult. And we've seen that across the last couple of years, we've seen championship in there, because the view that we have from that tiered seating position, which is quite flat, sometimes it looks like it hit the line. And as soon the players often, you know, from the players, they really feel, and a lot of line judges that are on the right hand side or on the left hand side looking along the line there, they see it go over. But like we were seeing, I was there on Sunday at the intermediate finals, and there was a couple of they look like they nicked the line. Gavin calls them, and the player on the line, he had one in the crowd near beside him, and they called the exact same as Gavin. Whereas the player that's, or the line judge that's on the right hand side that was looking on dead on, he was saying that no, you got the wrong call. He clearly has a much better view of that line looking straight along it. Like, so if you have line judges, you can't have one that's going to agree with you in the same position that you're in. They have to be along the line that gives a contradictory view.
For sure. Well, like by right, they probably should be sitting right at the glass as close as possible. Like really, like, but that needs to be looked at. The whole, as you said, the whole way that we package the games needs to be looked at. We said it. I think we said it last week. I think they need to fill the side galleries first. That's a no-brainer for me. Fill the side galleries, make it look like there's a crowd there, because 250 people is lost in that arena, and it just looks bad when the side galleries are in every single shot on the stream, more or less, and every shot that Steve takes as a photographer shows the side galleries.
So at least we know it's Steve's fault.
Yeah,
Absolutely my
for
fault.
sure.
But no, yeah, just to jump on that, it's absolutely From my point of view, it's a killer. It's an absolute killer photographing through three panes of glass to see yellow seats and their reflection. It's torture. In comparison to if you're shooting, it's the same when you do football or hurling. When you're at a match and there's a big crowd behind where you're shooting, it really adds to the photograph. But again, you look at the photographs that, we get the Times, the Indo, RTE, JA.ie, with good coverage out of the weekend. But most of them, you're looking at pictures of empty seats. If it's me, I'm saying, okay, I know the seats for the side gallery were free, but maybe we have to say we're going to pay for buses to bring kids or whatever it might be, just to put bums on them seats because it makes the sport look much more professionally ran if you've got a full stadium.
Yeah.
And the yellow seats really don't help. They
Yeah,
really
they
shouldn't.
really don't help. Yeah, they don't. They and they're so obvious. Like even when we had the world finals, and like I understand people. Some people don't like the that side on view. I actually really enjoy it. I think it just gives a whole different dynamic to how fast the players are when you're on that side on view. You just see them diving in, and whether they picked a double hopper and all that is so obvious when you're on that side on view. Whereas out the back, if you're way up in the tiers where myself and Ollie are in the at the very back of the arena, sometimes it's really hard to see from up there. I don't understand why people are sitting all the way up with us when they could be down at the side of the court.
Just like hearing your voice.
Again, running commentary through the match.
In terms of how that game, the first game ended, I was referencing there the end of the first game. I thought it was there for Nash, and I know we'll have regrets about it, but when I look back through it, like obviously 17-13, Robbie was winning and looked a better player at that stage. And then Dermot got hot, and Robbie didn't respond well to it. Like at 18-17, it was a he Robbie put one in the floor. At 19-17, Robbie put one in the floor. Both of those were really poor hand errors. 19-17, Dermot's in the service box. He needs to win two rallies to win that game. At that stage, Robbie needs to win five rallies successively to win that match. So Dermot's a massive favourite. He's also in the service box, so he's deciding to dictate the tempo of this next rally. He's deciding where he puts the ball into play. So, like a huge, huge opportunity there for Jeremy, it has to be said. And if you actually look at how it played out, and again, it's easy to say it out here. I would never disparage a player like Jeremy Nash, but at 19-17, he should have shot the right corner. He gets a chance. The right corner is open. Robbie's flat on his feet at that stage. And to me, Robbie looked beaten at that stage at 19-17. And Jeremy, instead of shooting the right corner, he goes for the pass with his right side arm down the left. He breaks it. Robbie pulls out a lovely dump shot. And to me, that was throwing a life raft to a drowning man in that situation. Dermot
Yeah.
had his foot on Robbie's throat there, and he didn't keep it there, unfortunately for him. And in the next rally, Robbie's a different man immediately in the next rally. If you watch it back, and anyone that's listening to this can watch it back, look at Robbie's body language in the very next rally. He's up on his toes. He's like a boxer that's just suddenly got some success with his punches, and now he can smell blood. And Dermot misses the ceiling. Robbie kills it off the back wall. Now Robbie needs to win two successive rallies. Dermot needs to win three. Robbie's in there at 19 all in the service box. It's a completely different game, and there's a poor return of service from Dermot, and he never really gets back into the rally. And still, Robbie makes a bad hand error at 19 all.
Yeah.
Then Dermot takes a timeout. There's a huge rally, and Robbie wins it. And that rally is the winning of it. And then Dermot overhits one. Robbie puts it away, set up, and then we have the call at the end. And the match was over after that call for me.
Yeah,
You go to Dermot looks up
that
and he's
call was the
despondent.
key.
He's despondent. It was.
That
That ended the match.
it was massive. And after that call, like Robbie could just do what he wanted. He could shoot the lights out, he could pass, he could he every Everything was going to be fine for him after that. You had that feeling that Dermot had to win that first game because he could beat him in a game to 11. That was the way it almost felt to me, that Dermot believed that if he did get him to a tie break, he could get that fast start that he's had the last couple of weeks. But to do it in two would like well, he had to win the first game. It was just like became really important, and it was almost like he was deflated. That's the start of that second game. It was like that call really lingered on him, that he had checked up, whatever, and he just couldn't get out of his head for it, which is really disappointing. But like for at the end of the day, the best two servers in the whole championship came to the fore. From the service box, the most effective players were Fiona Tully and Robbie McCarthy, and they were the ones that got the most aces by quite a considerable distance over the championship, most on returns, most like they were electric from the service box, and that was the real defining part of this championship.
That's
Best two servers.
I definitely agree with that analysis. Yeah, and I wouldn't like to sound like I'm taking away from Robbie either, because Robbie came from 1917 down to win the first game, and he won the second game 21-7. He was more than a deserving winner, but it is a game of momentum, and the margins are very fine, and Robbie just won the first game by those fine margins. But
I think
Fiona,
if
I
you
thought.
look as well at the women's game, was it the end of the first or the end of the second? Fiona went on a run of serves. She hit three or four in a row that were just outrageous. That Sian had, and talk about a momentum swing. Sian had literally no response to it, not through any fault of her own. There's nothing you can do when the ball's cracking like that. But yeah, Fiona serving, unbelievable.
And I actually
Yeah.
thought Sienna had started the match where she was serving really well, and then she just couldn't keep the momentum up, and then start some of the hand errors on her serves, where it's like, and I know I sound particularly shocked, where like Ollie was probably I was probably not being as kind to Sienna. The pressure is huge, and but like after watching her put three into the floor, from the service area in the semi-final, and then put four in the floor in the senior final, three in
Was
the
it
first game.
four?
Think it was four, three in the first game, one in the second.
Yeah, why do you think that is? Is that a case of she's forcing it a little bit? What's going on
I'd
there?
assume so. Like, okay, who knows what pressure is going to happen, and I'm sure Sienna will go away and analyze what she was doing on her serve, and but it's something you very rarely see. I don't know about you lads, but very rarely see it in championship handball, where you
Yeah.
see someone put two balls into the floor, never mind three or four in a match. Very, very rare. And I don't like you could go years without seeing the senior player put a ball into the floor. So it was very, very strange. It was almost like I know there's a lot of pressure on her to try and make something happen, but not putting her serve together, the way the match was going was just, and she had Fiona on the ropes. She was coming back at Fiona like really strong. She what was she 20 13 down, 19 13 down. She's got within a point or two, and then next thing, she puts the ball into the floor, gives Fiona the easiest, like that she gave her hand away. It's crazy.
I think as
Yeah.
well with the especially with the women's final there, I think when it comes to sport, like an all sport, to me, I'm more about the story, about the emotion, about the madness of it. I'm a big sap, I know this, but I'm all about that part of it. And I was looking at the celebrations in Roscommon for Fiona bringing home the cup, and we talk about how we promote the game and how we make the game grow and how we get people to go to matches. That's exactly how you do it. St. Colman's put on a big homecoming for her. It's full of kids, countless photos set taken, selfies taken. And then on the Sunday, I got a message from a friend of mine down that neck of the woods, and he was saying that Fiona was being brought to Dr. Hyde Park and being presented to the crowd at halftime in the Donegal Roscommon match. That's how you do it. That's how you
Brilliant,
grow
yeah.
the game. And I don't, I maybe I'm wrong. That to me is a new approach to really show it off within your own county, and then on the that would have been the Monday, or sorry, that would have been the Sunday, on the Monday or Wednesday, whatever it was, Fiona brings the trophy back to her old primary school. Like, as a teacher, first of all, we love the distraction where we don't have to do work for an hour. That's great, but more importantly, the buzz in that school for the next week or two with kids saying, "I want to go to handball training. I want to play." You'll see them with tennis balls outside in the wall outside the school. even if they're not playing handball ordinarily. It's a massive boost to the sport, and I'd love to see more of it.
Well, that's the dream situation because that's sort of organic. Like we're talking about how can we get bums on seats? Can we sort of gerrymander it? Can we engineer a crowd and send around a bus? Send your kids in. We need to fill the side galleries in Croker. What happened in Roscommon there is organic. They are all friends and supporters and handball people in the area and GAA people who came out of their own free will to pay tribute to the new champion. And I like the touch of bringing her out onto the pitch at halftime in a match. I know that has happened before. I don't remember it happening in Cavan when Brady was winning, but I don't think he would like to have it anyway. But I remember seeing a picture of Walter O'Connor and Tom Sheridan being introduced to the crowd at a Meath game after they won a senior doubles years
Remember
ago.
the world's team in 2012 being brought out at Croke Park, all 60 of them or whatever it was. I was heading over to Portland, but half the country is gone, I think, on that
Someone
team.
famously said to me, they were sitting there in the back of the plane coming home from Portland, and they went up to the front of the plane to use the toilet and came back down and said, "I passed Pat by 35 world champions." And the plane.
Oh, here we go. Are we going down that road
No,
now?
we're not going down this road. No, that's going to be one for the winter when it's quiet. But on your point, lads, or Steve, about the run of three or four ace serves. I think it might be three ace serves in a row that. If you want to hit the first one down the right, and then you could see, like, she's thinking, am I going to go down the right here again? And she did it again. But you're a boxing man, Chris. I, to use another boxing analogy, an ace serve is like a right-hand lead. Do you know famously where Ali came out in Zaire against Foreman and started throwing right-hand leads? And Foreman wasn't expecting it because it suggests that you're so slow that I can hit you with this obvious punch. But I think to serve an ace serve, it's the most demoralizing thing to be on the receiving end because the other guy gets in there and it's almost like he can hit this so hard or so precisely that you literally cannot put it back on the wall. He has just owned you on that in that particular play. And
It's
to
very,
do it
yeah,
repeatedly
it's
two or three
very,
times in a row is
very,
tough to deal with.
on your strong hand as well. It's almost like flipping you the bird at the same time. Turn around and give you the, yeah, it's crazy. Like that, I think that was almost the most exciting part of the match as well. It was where everyone went when she hit that third ace serve down the right, and you could see almost a wry smile from Sienna where she's like, "Do you know what? Fair play." It took guts to go with the third one, but both Fiona and Robbie's serves were outrageous. Like especially the ones that went down the right, they just seemed to have that natural flatness to them, where they're not going to hit the back wall. They're going to put you under pressure just to put anything on it, and yeah, it's like. We know that Robbie and Sienna and Diarmaid, they're made of tough stuff. They're top athletes, really, really professional, speak so well. They're very similar in a lot of the things that they do. They're super champions to have. And they'll be back for, they've met, both of them have many years of handball ahead of them, as long as they want, because they're the type of players that really look after themselves. So hopefully, these two losses won't be holding them back from playing a lot more championship. I know the two of them have real designs on the doubles as well, so they don't have time to wallow in this at all because championship doubles is going to be starting in the next week or two weeks, is it?
And they're both going in as probably as favourites to win the doubles. But well, you have the Funches there and the Cork fellas there as well in the
Yeah,
men's.
depends.
I think the Galway
The
women's
Galway girls are hot favourites. The one lad.
hot favourite. But I think that we don't have that many properly elite stars. Like if you're a promoter and you're trying to build up players, you do have some stars that are kind of coming, nascent stars, but. In terms of established stars, absolute elite A-listers in our sport, Sienna and Jermaine are on a list of about five or six, and that's it, active players.
100%.
And the interesting thing as well, I think we mentioned it on the commentary, or sorry, you lads, I think, mentioned it on the commentary, or I told you about it, so I presume you brought it up because I'm so smart. But the fact that Martina and Paul Brady weren't in it meant that the defending champion in the ladies and the men's wasn't in the draw in the senior singles. When did we say that last happened? You were going back
It's a
to.
real anomaly. Maybe when Bernie Hennessy had pulled out, I don't know if Peter McCauley was the champion for a year and the two of them dropped out around the same time, but like
It may never have happened before.
may never have happened. Yeah, might have been something that we never see again as well. Like, and for and like going back to Coman's, for all the huge amount of success they've had in ladies' handball, it was actually a bit of a surprise to me that they hadn't had a ladies' four-wall senior title back in Coman's before. So, like, very special for them. And the fact that it was only the second time a senior four-wall title had gone back there, Mickey Welsh obviously winning one in the late 80s. So, yeah, like, it's, yeah, like, there's obviously lots of positives, and it's hard to compare and contrast to other years, and naturally you're going to do that. And I think it is a shame that more people weren't there to make more of an atmosphere. The crowd can be a little bit flat in Croke Park. Like, sometimes it goes past me because I'm watching the game, I'm talking about the game so intently, and like, I'd actually don't hear the crowd noise until the very end, until it kind of comes through the referee's mic, So,
I have a theory on that.
go for it.
The atmosphere in Croke Park is non-existent. It's not just a little bit flat. It doesn't exist. It's funereal. It's like going in. You almost feel like you should come in and say sorry for your troubles and walk along the front row and shake everyone's hand because it's a deathly silence. And I think the reason for that is twofold. One is in the earlier rounds, the arena is just far too big for semi-finals. It's just far too big. Even when the senior semi-finals were in Kingscourt, they weren't getting good crowds. For some reason, semi-finals haven't been getting good crowds. And the second thing is that we have tried this rent-a-crowd approach. Let's put every game of handball that's going to be played in the island of Ireland in this centre on this day. So then you're guaranteed that people will be there. They're not going to be there because they're going to be sick of handball by the time the senior starts. They're getting out the door. There's nowhere to eat in that in for example in that entire
Yeah.
building. You can't eat. You can't eat in the bar. A lot of things that you might want to do you can't do there, so you've got to get out. You take the juveniles. There were about three or four juveniles, the previous week, from within 2 hours drive of Dublin. Look at all the other counties, that are within 2 hours of Dublin. Monaghan had two,
Yeah.
Cavan had none, Meath had one, Kildare had none, Wicklow had none, Louth had none. So all of those kids, they were going home. So that it is not working. And the biggest part of that is. When you're going into that arena, first of all, we all know it's badly designed, and it's not a pleasant experience being there when there's other games on because you're walking across the back of the courts and you're getting in the way and you're scooting around and you're trying to duck under camera phones and all that sort of stuff. But everyone that's there is preoccupied with another game because that's the thing that's forgotten about. I'll stick on other games and they'll stay for the senior. Yeah, if I was there, I was there before playing Masters handball. My main focus was the game I was playing in. And yeah, see how that goes. And then after that, you go, you get a shower, you have a cup of tea, and then you think about the senior. Whereas you want the atmosphere to build all day towards the senior. Literally, the phrase all roads lead to Croke Park, all roads should lead to the show court. That's the only place you should be going. That should be your entire focus. So, and the guy beside you or the girl beside you. So when you're meeting in the corridor, that's what you're talking about. You're not going, how'd your game go? Yeah, what about the other guy down the road? How'd his game go? I'm reffing the next game, or I'm doing line judge. Oh, I'm after watching four games, so I'm going for a walk. The time the senior comes around, how would you have an atmosphere? Everyone's just drained.
Yeah, and I think as well, I was during one of the games. I think it was the women's final. I was sitting down editing a couple of photographs, and I was in the side gallery. So when you're in that side gallery, you can hear everything that's going on in the other two courts, and I could hear more cheering outside in court one and court two. Maybe it was just court two. I'm not sure which. I could hear more cheering and more shouting there than I did in the show court all day. And I know, I think we spoke about this on the phone. On the way home, I have a massive, massive problem with any match being played on the All-Ireland final day apart from the senior finals. The LGFA don't let any women's football be played on the day of the All-Ireland final. Camogie Association the same, and the same with the GAA and the hurling of football. That has to be your showpiece. I think it shows a lack of respect to the senior grade, and as probably the worst handballer in the three of us.
Probably is doing a lot of heavy lifting there.
But I'm probably the most elitist insofar as I think seniors should be our be all and end all. And I think when you put, I know Chris gets a lovely kick out of me calling them recreational grades. When you put recreational grade finals on the same day as our senior finals, I find that insulting as a handball person, but also as a sports person. And Paul, I'm sure you're the same as a journalist. When you see posts going up about Joe Bloggs is now an All-Ireland champion on the day of the senior All-Ireland finals. And fair play to Joe Bloggs winning whatever he's won, but he's not the All-Ireland champion. There's one. His name is Robbie McCarthy, or her name is Fiona Tully, and I know that's two before you correct me. But I think that this idea that we're going to run other matches on the same day as our senior final is just mental. You wouldn't have it in any other sport.
Yeah, I do think that there is a lack of focus at creating the elite side, creating an elite sports side of on the, and I can understand why they've gone with this approach to think that the more activity we have in the centre will lead to more people wanting to watch the All-Ireland Senior Finals. But it's actually had a it's actually worked against them, and it
Has
proved itself on the weekend. So, like,
just
for obvious reasons, I said most players that are playing can basically stick it on YouTube on the way home, and they could be an hour and a half down the road, and they won't be there until they won't be. Instead of getting home at 11 o'clock at night, they'll be home at 8:30.
Paul, you were saying there that you think there's two reasons why the atmosphere didn't get going. I'd add a third, and I think it's again. It's come up in conversation. It probably come up on Friday night in the pub. We were chatting before this. Players are too nice. They're in there, they're shaking hands, they're hugging. And no, I've no problem with sportsmanship, but I'd love a little bit of venom, a little bit of fight. And I know we previewed the weekend last week, and we were showing one match as kind of the standout match of the weekend. And it was on before the senior finals. And it was the correct me on the or give me the
Master
correct
Zafon.
the Masters A final between Gavin Bogey and Brendan Fleming. There was plenty of needle in it. I guarantee you there was more atmosphere there than there was for the two senior finals. You need a bit like in pro wrestling. I'm not saying we need to go down the call each other out avenue, but there was a bit of needle in that. There was a bit of fire. There was something for the crowd to get stuck into. Jesus. You know, it's just gone so nice. Is there anything that
I'll
could have
tell you a
done to
story,
spark
Steve.
it?
I remember the Cavan and Meath doubles games were unbelievable. Walter and Tom against Paul and Michael. It was probably the game that hooked me on the sport when I was about 17, going up to the Old Crow Park to watch them. And the Meath boys won that night. But I remember there was someone there. Kells always brought a massive crowd. There was some fella there from Kells, and game was getting tight, and just a pro of nothing, he just goes, "You'll never beat the Royals." Well, another fella from Cavan, I won't name him, he just goes, "We'll fucking beat you tonight." The roof nearly came off the place. Jesus Christ, if someone did something like that in the National Centre at the minute, they'd be on Liveline on the Monday. I mean, there is no, it's so dead, you're nearly afraid to raise your voice there. Like, you're whispering to the fella beside you.
It has to be a conscious thing that, like, this has been a it's been degenerating for years now. It's been it was it Handball wasn't always this passive, kind of placid atmosphere. In Croke Park, it used to be electric and 60 by 30 finals day, but they also created cards. It was almost like a boxing card. We had the minor singles, the intermediate doubles. There was a bit of something different. And if, like, putting on the men's singles, the ladies' singles, I think that it would be too sparse of a day just having two senior finals, elitist as you want to make it, Stephen. But, like, you can bulk it up with the minor and actually treat the next minors as the ones that are going to come through. The like even though the minor finals this year were lopsided, especially the girls' minors, but like we have to do something that gets people excited to come along. I think having maybe trying to create maybe to run the championship as singles and doubles alternate weeks gives more time to promote. Gives more time to do something different. Might see some weird results in the doubles that might be worth talking about. At the moment, they right, let's get the singles done out of the way. And it is almost like there's almost an idea across all the provinces, let's just get these games done instead of let's create great sport.
Absolutely, absolutely. You've absolutely nailed it there. I would say to the decision makers in our sport, just be bold. Don't worry if it, don't be afraid of anyone giving out to you. If you decide that the boys' minor final, sorry, in actual fact, to give it its correct title, it's the men's minor final. The same as it is in Gaelic football. It's not a juvenile thing. What's the people that are playing in it? Potentially 18 years of age, they're not juveniles anymore. So it shouldn't be called the boys' get minor final. That sort of thing should be tidied up. It's not the girls' minor final. It's a ladies' minor final. But
And
if the
women's minor final.
whatever. If the stop them coming out in you there now. If the male minor final looks like an attractive game, and the ladies' game isn't minor final is not going to be a particularly good game. If you can look at it and go, look, that's going to be a mismatch. Fine. The ladies' game isn't played on that card for this year. That's just the way it is. So what? Someone might complain. So what? You have a duty of care to the sport, not to some parent or not to some person on Facebook. Be bold and make the decision what's best for the sport. But we're paralysed by fear of such and such a person will kick up. So what? They're going to complain anyway. Do what's best for the sport. You nail it there, Chris. It needs to be like a boxing card. It needs to be attractive. I remember a few, when DJ Carey came back to handball. And he played doubles with Duxie about 10 or 12 years ago, and he hadn't been in handball for a long time, and he was a big name. And they played Sean Devine and Saka Toomey from Belfast in an All-Ireland final. Cracking doubles match, DJ and Duxie against Saka and Devine. Cracking game. You knew there was going to be a bit of drama. There was going to be a lot of character to it. You had A-listers here, played on a back court in O'Loughlin's at that time. And I remember thinking that what an opportunity missed. Put it on the show court. It'll fill the gallery. People want to see that game. So we need to be cute about that, and I don't really care if it's if it makes it harder to arrange the fixtures. If it's harder, then it's worth doing. It has to be done. That should be Saturday's funereal atmosphere and very small crowd, and the previous week's debacle that went on to half 11 at night. That should be a line in the sand there. We said we're going to tear it all up and let's start from scratch and do what suits us best and what's attractive to our members and to the sporting to the wider public to come and watch our games. Because the stream is brilliant. It's brilliant. We have that pretty well nailed now.
I like, and
The live
obviously
experience is shocking though. Why is there no big screen up there? I was sitting in the back row and I was jumping up, leaning over like a giraffe, trying to get in around you, Chris, to see replays. We should have a big screen up. We had six screens in around the show court, each of them showing the score.
It's there's a lot that we could be looking at, and I think that it takes a little bit more organization, but I think we have to almost interweave the doubles and the singles so that they come back to back weekends, 2 or 3 weeks from each other, you know. So they, like, without doing something kind of drastic, we're going to end up doing the same thing over and over. And right now, I don't think that it's working, as in we're not creating the best atmosphere. We're not creating any atmosphere, perfectly honest. But like,
We're gonna move on. I know, because
but like,
it's
just let me finish my point for a second, right?
fine.
So if we're not creating any atmosphere and we're not creating great matches, then the sport is going to suffer because we can't attract outside interest. We're not, that's either from sponsors or new people watching the sport, and that's a major problem for the game.
Okay, moving on. We'll park that there because we could go on all night, and we probably will the next time we meet up. Looking to this weekend, if you're looking for live handball, it's at the LA Athletic Club. It's hosting the Race for Eight. It's a pro stop number five, I think. I know from chatting to our friend Dave Vincent over in America, Dave was saying that David Walsh has gone over, Molly Dagg has gone over, and Niamh Heffernan has gone over, and they'll obviously be playing with other Irish players out there as well. Mark Doyle will be there, and Martin and Dermot will be there, Clodagh Monro, the others, Aoife Holden, a few others. Nice. I'm surprised there isn't more going, if I'm honest. LA seems like a nice little trip. I'm disappointed we weren't invited now. Maybe next year.
It'll be interesting now. I know that David went last year along, and Paul Brady went a couple of weeks after the senior singles final, and I think both lads were just wrecked emotionally and physically after the championship and after that final, and they both were played poorly out there and got beaten in the early rounds. So I'd say David will have a sight now. He's had an extra bit of time to reset after losing the semi final this year, and I'd say he'll be viewing that as a huge opportunity now
He's
to.
seeded number two.
I also have a theory that the ball is diverged so differently. The American ball and the Irish ball have gone such di drastic different directions that it's actually harder to make those trips and be more effective in them, you know. So, like maybe in the ladies' grades, where the Irish women are playing at such a high level, they can go over and the ball might affect them. It's almost the way when Paul was in his prime. He just went over there and you could have played with a tennis ball and he would have been crushing it. But like, I think they realize that the ball is so much faster over there, maybe not taking as much of a hop, that it gives the lads that are playing on the race for eight on a regular basis a little bit more of an advantage.
Yeah,
Big opportunity for
sure.
Molly. And looking at the names in the draw, I think it's a big opportunity for Molly Dagg. I don't know what way the draw is going to go, but you'd have to fancy yourself and Niamh to be there at the business end of it. I know Niamh is the reigning players' champion, is what they call it. She'd be number one seed, but I think, yeah, I'm going to tip Molly to win the whole thing out.
Hometown
Not
call
just
there.
because a big hometown call, yeah. Anything else, lads?
Yeah, to be honest, I'm looking forward to actually watching some of the race for eight this weekend. I know we'll do one on the doubles in the next couple of weeks as the doubles really kicks off, because I think the doubles might actually open up. There might be a few other sleepers in the mix that haven't kind of come to the fore. And see who's in the draw really when the draw comes out in the doubles. That would be really interesting. But hard to hard I don't know. I don't know. I haven't seen the race for eight draw for this weekend, so I think you might be early on your call there, Steve, but
Now listen,
never
it's inside information.
know.
Briefly before we finish up, actually, haven't mentioned any of the adult grades. Congratulations to Rory Grace winning the intermediate. Beat your county man in the final.
Sure did, yeah. Niall didn't have a great day by his standards, and you got to say Rory really took advantage of the fact that he probably, like, Rory doesn't have a great lifetime r set of results against Kyle Jordan, and once Kyle Jordan was out of the mix, he played really well. He played really confidently, and gotta say that Rory won convincingly on the day. Niall's level had dipped a bit, but I actually watched Niall play the quarterfinals, the Mayo Senior Championship, the team, and he played really well. So I'm sure he'll be gunning to win that. Nothing like a bit of home championship pride to get you back on in the mix. So yeah.
Jack Holden had a great win as well in the junior final. He won well against Shawnee Doyle,
Yeah, very
which was
convincing.
Jack Holden's a cool character. Like, I played against him before, and he doesn't get flustered at all. If he rolls one dead or he puts one in the floor, he's still the same. He's very level, and that there's a lot to be said for that. And he took that with that in the occasion in his stride and picked up a great win there as well. So, Cara McKellar as well won the ladies' singles against Laura Duff. I think Laura was the youngest player and the lowest seed in that intermediate singles. Like, I saw Loch McCrory had that posted on Facebook, so that was a great run for her. But and a brilliant win for Carmel as well. She's only what, 19 or so, isn't she? 19 or
Yeah,
20.
she once Carmel ca settled into and got her serve going, she has a really good sidearm serve. And once she got that going, she didn't really look back. In it was close up, like Laura was up, I think 15-9 at one stage, or maybe 14-9, and Carmel got a serve going that gave Laura a lot of trouble, and she just kind of convincingly won from that point out. But Laura's very she's got an excellent she's a excellent technical ability about her, so I'm definitely one for the future. She could be the one coming up between herself and Carmel, could be the next one up challenging for senior honours in a couple of years.
Brendan Fleming beat Gavin Buggy in a tiebreaker in that Masters final, which I keep meaning to watch it back, but I'm going to watch that one back because saw a couple of minutes of it now, and it was good stuff. We're saying there's no needle. The boys were in on top of each other. There was lots of covering, lots of arguing with the referee, and it was a bit more box office. So.
Right, so lads, that's episode number two of Between the Lines, lads. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks for myself, Chris and Paul. Next week, we should be ready to move the podcast to a more familiar hosting sites like Spotify and others. Until then, thanks for listening.